Anyway, back to the story. So I started at talks, I would ask people, how many of you have ever before had a fully mutual conversation with a non-human? And it was, the response was always the same, which is that everybody would laugh, and then somebody, it was always a woman, would sort of shyly raise her hand. And then more and more people would raise their hands until about half the people had their hands raised. And I would say, so how many of you have ever before admitted this publicly? Everybody would laugh and drop their hands. And then they would tell these amazing stories of conversations with rocks and stars and rivers and trees. And it wasn't just like, go fetch my slippers to a dog. You know, it was real conversations with all these things that we normally consider inanimate. And so the book was going to be kind of like the Height Report on sexuality. It's going to be the Jensen Report on interspecies communication, where people would just write in their stories. And it would also be about the dissonance between our public and private discourse on interspecies communication. And my agent at the time thought that this would just be this amazing, you know, sort of Bambi meets Flipper kind of feel-good book that would be a New York Times bestseller. And I tried to write that book, and I couldn't do it, in part because it would have really stunk, and in part because I realized that to write yet another book that purports to show that non-humans can think and can communicate would be really demeaning. It would be like writing a book that purports to show that blondes can think or that Jews aren't subhuman, because it wouldn't question the underlying bigotry that holds humans as the standard by which everyone else is. It holds civilized humans by the standard by which white civilized, male white civilized humans who write books as a standard by which everyone else, me, that holds me as a standard by which everyone else is judged. And there were a couple of stories convinced me that I couldn't write the book that way. And one of them was the stories about chimps and apes and American Sign Language. And oh, by the way, I don't know if you know this, but a lot of the chimps, when they're done with the done teaching them, when they're done with that experiment, they ship them off to other vivisection labs, and there they, you know, pump them full of smallpox or pesticides or whatever they want to do. And one of the people who was teaching chimps ASL several years later went into one of those vivisection labs, and the chimp recognized him, was in a cage, and immediately recognized him and started desperately signing, key out, you know, get me the hell out of here. And the scientist had to save up money for like 7 years or something to buy the chimp, which is buying a chimp, what a weird idea. But that's actually not the story that made me think I couldn't do it. The story that made me think I couldn't do it about that was our discourse around apes and ASL generally goes along the lines of, you know, how many years they've been working with those stupid apes and they got the communication abilities of a four-year-old? But the thing is, nobody ever asks which of these creatures, the apes or the scientists, is bilingual. And the other question that nobody asks is, if a bunch of apes kidnap some scientists and put them in mobile homes, how quickly do they figure out what the hell's going on? And then the other story that let me know that I couldn't do the book that way was the story of Clever Hans. Clever Hans is a horse about the turn of the 19th to 20th century. Very, very clever. He could add, subtract, multiply, divide, find the cube root of 27. He could tell you what day of the week it's going to be, January 15th, 2093, whatever. And what they eventually discovered is that Hans was not able to find the cube root of 27. Instead, Hans was paying very, very close attention to the people who would ask the question. And when Hans got to the right answer, the person would relax ever so slightly, not because they were cheating, but because Hans had got to the right answer. I don't need to pay quite so close attention. So all the stories that I read about that ended the same way, which is that Hans really wasn't so clever, was he? Think about it. Which would you rather have in a friend? Somebody who can find the cube root of 27 or somebody who can read and respond to the slightest movements of your musculature and emotions? You know, frankly, when you look at my relationship history, you'll find it's cube root of 27 for me.